companions. We help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of Reverse Interview with your host, Fienyo. Moi. If you missed out on part one, this is really a sign that you should go back and listen to it. So what started this conversation was Jojo, who was the first interviewee of episode one in Onions Talk with Interwoven Productions, where she messaged me a couple weeks ago saying, you know what, Fia, I think maybe it's timely to do an episode where you are interviewed and to reflect on all of the learning and wisdom that has crystallized over all these different conversations with incredible practitioners all over the world. And then I thought, yeah, wow, why not? That will be really interesting. And just to be able to have a space in which I can also share my thoughts and reflections. And so here it is, more really interesting questions and conversations in part two. Stay tuned to the end for a surprise question.
As you were talking, I've got questions that are brewing about cultural democracy. Democracy and citizenship and agency are words that you used a lot. And I'm going to ask you to come back and have a little look at some of what do you think you have learned from this journey about that? So I'm just popping that there for you to have a little think about. And the other one that's really come out strongly for me is the world of post-capitalism is something you've mentioned. And I know that you and I have talked about gift and circular economy and some of those alternative ways of thinking and being. And I'm really curious to hear you still talk about working alongside NGOs or commerce, in fact, in what do they call it, the social responsibility kind of model, and where the new economies fit into that, and what's holding us back from going fully fledged new economies. So those are two that I'd like to sort of pop there to think about, that we definitely I definitely will be asking you about. Before we do that, I already had on my list, because I've been listening to this Onions Talk podcast and I've been incredibly inspired by the contributors. There's such depth and breadth there of practice and understanding. Tell me about some of the organizations that that have touched you, moved you, made you, you know, really brought you up, and why you've invited the people that you have to talk about in the Onions Talk series. Let's encourage people to come to the podcast if they haven't already by sharing some of that.
I think, like, for who I invite, I don't necessarily invite people because of fame or, you know, what they've already done, but just I think energy and synergy, right? So like the first couple episodes were really like people who I've been having conversations with consistently over the years since starting up the network, because I mean the network is there, but people engage in different ways and to a different degree, also because some people are just not very much in social media and it's too much effort for me to do extensively that sort of communication beyond social media when it's not funded. And I think there's sort of like a common thread and energy when you see a person in their organization and when you talk to them in person and you know where the motivation or the purpose or, you know, how the work they're doing also reflects their life and their inquiry and what they want to change. And that deeper sense of motivation, I think that's what draws me to invite people on the podcast. And I mean, some came quite fluidly. So like Andrea, for example, Andrea was my film tutor. I don't know if the dogs are having a fight or something outside, but sorry for the distraction. I can't do anything about the dogs. And so Andrea, she's just one of those tutors where, you know, I look at her and I hear her speak and I'm like, wow, it just feels like there's a light shining on her because she says things in such a gentle way with so much wisdom. And even with the most difficult classmates, she still manages to, you know, criticize in such a gentle way that people wouldn't feel offended. You know, for me, that's like, wow. And she has such a human-centered way of approaching things and doing work and constantly reflecting and checking on herself as well, that I think on that level, like, you know, there were moments when I'm like, when I'm older, I want to be like someone like her. So that those are also the sort of people that draw me into the podcast. And then
what was her full name and the name of her podcast, Fear, if people would like to look that up?
So I think that was Andrea. So her name is Andrea Zimmerman. So it's called Human Connection and Communities Through Filmmaking with Andrea Zimmerman. That was episode 8. And Andrea is just, she's such an amazing person. And it was very interesting for me in that podcast as well, if I may digress, because I knew her as a tutor, someone I really respect, and who's, you know, in my filmmaking journey, really supported me and gave me strength in different ways, especially in dealing with socially engaged and political topics. And having the sort of insight and awareness to be able to, you know, tell me what I needed to hear. But also through the podcast and through after graduation, I learned more about her life experiences, which I didn't know before. And the podcast was so honest and genuine and authentic in a way in which we connected that hasn't had this sort of space and opportunity for before. And I think in connecting with her, who she is, and her life experiences that shape her practice, the way she is, who she is as a person, also sort of like brought a lot of emotions within me. You know, like I think when she said in the podcast, what kept her alive was someone having really listened to her and hearing her experiences, hearing her say her story. And then I sort of like reflected back on my journey as well. And a lot of what I want to give also came from pain that I had experienced and wanting to support people in a way that they wouldn't have to experience the pain that I have. So yeah, I think a lot of what makes me do and develop the practice that I do is also these conversations. And these moments of human connection that is so genuine and beautiful. And if I could share people's stories and provide that platform, be it through film or my performances or works or podcasts, to be able to do so, like, I think that's what motivates me, because then you hear a different story that, if I guess if you're comfortable and your people around you are comfortable, you might not hear of. But then understanding that would bridge those sort of differences in society in ways that is not confrontational.
I'm cross with myself for not having the name written down, but the wonderful Turkish lady who took Asen. That really unique take on what community work is. Yeah. I just loved her podcast. Talking about, come on. And I was out on a COVID walk at the time with headphones, just laughing my way around the park because it was so refreshing.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about her.
So Asen, so her episode was called Redefining Activism, Local Connection and Community Care. So actually Asen's a good friend of Andrea. Oh, I met her right before I left London, because I went to a screening of Andrea's film, which she invited me to. And then I met Asen. We spoke really briefly, but she's very much, you know, activist in a housing scene in London. And then I got her contact, but I never quite, because I was moving around so much. And I mean, life's been a bit crazy during COVID. So I didn't quite get to touch back on her. But then I forgot what it was, but I contacted her again, I think just checking in or something, and then she was sharing, and then I was like, you know, would you like to be on my podcast to share about, you know, activism? And it was just really interesting to hear her perspective, her energy, and that sort of that passion that really came from very deep care. Actually, she wasn't really feeling okay during that period of time, and afterwards she kind of did come to me and asked and was saying that she wasn't quite comfortable with the way that she presented herself because it didn't feel like the way that she normally was. But then, you know, I went back and listened to the podcast again, and it didn't feel like it was too much. You know what I mean? Like there was a certain level of anger in there, but the anger is justified, you know, it's qualified, like all this sort of stuff that's going through. And the sort of the ways in which she was talking about activism as really community care and local connection, it was so humane. And all of the points that she was saying and the energy that went through, you know, it's like moments like this in my podcast episodes where I just have so much deep respect and appreciation for these people, just because, you know, it's not an easy work what they're doing, and there is always going to be so much opposition, and yet, you know, still being able to fight for it, continue it, even if it gets exhausting at times, and still have that energy and that fire burning when so many in society probably have just let their fire be, you know, watered down and gone. So I think, yeah, these are the moments in which it also keeps me going through these podcast conversations, because you know that there are good people, beautiful people out there.
Yeah, definitely. Please do send back to her the reflection that actually it just came across as human and real and deeply grounded in love and care, and that's what was transmitted. And you know, the word activism, what does that mean? If you're doing it right, that's what it means: care, love, deeply groundedness. So, are there any other episodes you'd like to reflect on before I guide us back towards some of these themes that might be coming out?
Oh, there were so many episodes. But all of them are like really good episodes for different reasons. I guess some of the episodes that are quite fresh in my head are also the ones kind of like the first couple of episodes. So the one with Josh about regenerative restorative agriculture, where, you know, we were also talking about the ethics of having kids, which we had these conversations when I was at his farm. I mean, we had like hours long of conversations. This episode just encapsulated a little bit of that, but it was, you know, a perspective of someone who has been through that sense of despair that I kind of was in at that point in time, and come out of it, decided to really do something about it by setting up a regenerative and restorative farm, and have a perspective that is positive, that is hopeful about the future. And I think that for me was encouraging to hear. And then also the episode with IM, Internet Age Media, about systems change, about sort of like critical thinking from a deeper level, the sort of dynamics at play between the rich and the poor, and the narratives that is being sold to us, and how much more work that needs to be done to actually understand that. And the idea of, you know, us taking responsibility and ownership and be accountable for ourselves, our actions, and to do something about the situation that we're in.
I was very moved by that particular podcast as well. Do you want to tell us there who that was and the title of it again, if you want to look, because it, I think that that's our gateway, our link now to talk a little bit about citizenship and agency.
So the one with IM was Environmental Emergency, Internet and Futures with IM. That was with Andres and Lucy. They are both based in Barcelona. So that was episode 9. And then the one with Josh was episode number 2, actually. Evermeadow Farm, Restorative and Regenerative Agriculture.
Yes, yeah. So IAM, is it an acronym?
Yeah, it's for Internet Age Media, yeah.
I very much enjoyed that. I very much enjoyed their insights as well. I thought it was wonderful. And it was very timely for us at Interwoven, because we were just pulling together a problem-solving pod. We work in sort of sociocratic pods, and we were pulling together a pod to really look at what our theory of change was, why we were to bring this essence of change, this question of change and what change we're trying to make. And our conclusion was that we were not seeking to make specific change. Our conclusion was that we were seeking, we were not seeking to make prescribed change. What we were seeking to do was empower, create agency, and to develop citizenship so that people were designing and reaching for their own change. And it was a major and significant sort of shift for us, which we've formalized into our mission statement and our theory of change now.
Wow.
There's a really important thing there, isn't there, about funding, which is my next thing to come on to. But there's because most agencies require to prescribe change.
Yeah.
So we're being a little bit brave in making that statement that we're not going to create an impact assessment that proves the change that you're after. So I was very interested in the kind of things that they had to say about that and about the role of new technologies in that, because it does open up this new way of thinking about community power, about open, you know, it led the way into open source thinking, didn't it? And so I'm really interested in what have all of these conversations about agency, about citizenship, about who's dictating what change should happen.
I actually wanted to touch on that point on funding, because this was something that I realized along my discovery investigation process and learning journey. So dictated by who? I think it's dictated by funders. It's dictated by the economy as of now. When you look at funders from a governmental point of view or multinational cooperation sort of point of view, like European Union, or from the economic sort of business CSR point of view, which I guess was also what you touched on, it's not what drives them is not necessarily love for the environment or love for humanity or love for society, because their KPIs that drive them are things that would directly impact their businesses or their chances of election or economic reasons. And I think something that I really struggle with funding is that if you want to get certain funding, you have to just work with certain community or certain group or achieve this kind of impact, which is very limiting in many levels. And it's like what you said, right? You know, empowering people, be it through building their social capital or building that sort of confidence or helping them to heal collectively with a community so that they can do better. not in the sense of like, you know, doing better as in earning more money or whatever, but, you know, doing better being able to achieve their fullest potential, that isn't quite recognized or seen as something that should be funded for. Because from the funder's perspective, right, their KPI is that I want to be able to document the change. I want to be able to see from your impact evaluation report what change has been achieved, what is tangible, what fits into these data, so that I can then report back and put it in my CSR publicity report that, you know, this is how many communities we have impacted, this is how much money they're earning now, and, you know, these are the numbers and the figures. But humans are complex, and we have emotions, we have feelings. The change comes in ways that are more complex and emotional and intrinsic than what these data and numbers can put a figure to. And we don't realize that because we are in a society that is so driven by these data and reports and numbers, because we want a foolproof way of trying to, you know how much has been done, or, you know, what else needs to be done, or, you know, to have such full control. Because we don't want to not know, we don't want uncertainty. And then when you look at a government sort of point of view and perspective, government, they have to please the people. And to please the people, economy also plays a big part of it, where they have, you know, livelihoods, they have jobs, and that is secure. And then to make sure that people have jobs, they need to please businesses. But then businesses are profit-driven. They want to maximize profit. Even if they exploit people or natural resources, doesn't matter, because they just look at profits. I mean, a lot of businesses, not saying that all of them are like this, because you have initiatives like the B Corps movement and sort of triple bottom lines, where you look at people, planet, and profit, and all these new initiatives coming up. But fundamentally, business principles, even when you look at business schools, they are still advocating for the same old story. And, you know, that is, you know, how can you maximize your profit through increasing your revenue and reducing your cost. And the biggest cost is going to be your human cost. Environmental cost, nobody cares about it, because there isn't a law or rule for that. And because it's going to be bad for businesses, which will directly impact the amount of tax that governments can take back in to do the work to service people, then, you know, you have this dilemma and this paradox where we are not really doing much. And now the whole conversation of like carbon offset credits, it's like, right, if my business is polluting and I'm producing carbon, then I'm just going to buy a carbon offset off somewhere else. And then it almost incentivizes me from doing bad. So it's like, how much money do you earn doing the bad stuff to funnel and fund the good stuff, which is just like a tiny percentage? Is that even worth it? And when we look at a sort of larger perspective, right, the best for the planet is non-consumption. But which governments are going to advocate for that, when that is going to affect their economy, that is going to affect people's livelihoods? And they have very little incentive to actually understand that.
I'd like to explore about change. Who sets the agenda for change? If you're making change, who's funding it? And in the fund, and if you've got the money and you're funding it, then you're dictating the change. So the two the two are clearly linked, and at the moment, we, you know, I think we will all agree, most of the contributors to your series will agree, that it's not working. There are too many people falling through the cracks in the system, where the people who have the money are dictating the change. You know, what's the economics of that? And then maybe that will probably loop us back to who's setting the agenda, I think. So we've talked, haven't we? And you've made several allusions to alternative ways of, and I guess the eco farms and the regenerative farming is a circular economy in itself. I know that the Katja and the Finnish example look very much at circular economy, interwoven productions. My own company, we work on the circular economy within organisations, specifically to allow us not to be dependent on grant funding. I guess what I'm saying is that there are lots of little initiatives like that, and it puts me in mind of Paul Hawkins' Blessed Unrest. I think we've probably talked about it now, and I think he wrote it back in the 80s. This is a really old notion, that actually there is already a strong movement of organisations that are driven locally and are operating without help and without permission, to steal a phrase from another author, and getting stuff done often on inside alternative economies, as described by Charles Eisenstein. Does it matter that they're not all joined up? Does it matter that actually they're just bubbling away as a movement in their own localities doing their thing? Is it because the change is not fast enough, not impacting enough? If you can establish that there are, you know, probably tens of thousands, maybe even millions of these small initiatives operating via alternative economies already, is that enough to make you feel less raging inside the cage, or is it that not enough movement for you? Is that how do you see the world of post-capitalist economy and what you've learned from the examples that you've heard in your podcasts?
I think it's okay to not join. Like, you can be connected, which would facilitate a lot of learning and exchange. But also, what works in somewhere else might not work for where I'm at, or what works for a community might not make me feel welcome there. You know, there are all of these different factors, and I don't think the point is to like create this thing that is of such a large scale, but really what works best for you with your community and your environment, whatever that means. And there isn't like a one way or one prescribed way of doing things. And I think a part of this podcast is also to highlight that there are so many different ways of doing things. There isn't a one prescribed method that is going to work for everyone. You know, what works somewhere else might not work here. Something that I've been sort of recently looking at is cryptocurrency and how some currencies can be regenerative. So then if we're stuck in a money system, a financial system that doesn't serve us and that has those power relations and dynamics that is uneven and unequal, then one important way to break out of that would be to use and adopt a different kind of currency that doesn't maintain those sort of power structures. So I think that's quite like an interesting space to look at. I'm following something called Seeds right now. It's the name of a cryptocurrency, and they're looking at many different things in their system, sort of a participatory democracy way of voting and stuff that is horizontal as much as they can be and try to be, and sort of ways of using the currency to support environmental good work. So then repurposing what the currency is for and what they stand for, and bringing together people who are really like-minded towards regenerative futures. So that is quite interesting.
Yeah, because I've recently been introduced to the capability approach by Amiata Sen and Marta Nussbaum. They're both philosophers and economists. And they have been, and a Nobel Prize winner, Amiata Sen, and his work on how do you measure well-being and health and, you know, the measure of human development. And their work was largely about how to come away from the sort of gross national product as this way of looking at how you measure things. There's to come away from the economic measure to find another person-centered approach to look at it. And I was absolutely fascinated to see that they, what I was mostly fascinated to see was just how high profile their findings were, that we essentially should not be dictating change, but change should be measured against people's capabilities. Their, you know, what is it that enables them to envisage what change that is meaningful to them, and to realize it. And that was one of the sort of things that sat underneath our recent sort of view of what change should be and who should be driving an agenda for change. yes, I mean, who should be saying what the change is? When we engage in socially engaged art, should we already have decided what the change is we're trying to make?
For me, no. But from a funder's perspective, they need to know. That is the sort of old story. So like as an artist, even if you don't want to prescribe that, you don't prescribe that and then you just don't get the funding because funders want to be able to have, so because they want to know the impact, right? And when, so I think there are different levels to this. On a personal level, I see my role as more a facilitator that gives whatever that I can, the tools for people to do what they want and what they most want to do. And that is where I see myself coming in to drive that change and also just opening conversations so that people would start thinking about certain things. But the action is up to them and within their capabilities, within the organization they work for or whatever it is, hoping that some of my conversations would tug at their heartstrings and, you know, emotionally connect something such that they would be committed to put themselves in an uncomfortable position to change something. But then, you know, from that, I guess, reality, social, economic perspective, it is all of these KPIs that different industries, organizations, individuals are bounded by, which doesn't serve, which is also something that I'm talking about constantly in different events that I'm speaking on to try and change that wiring or that way of thinking and that way of functioning and working. And then on another level, I mean, the climate crisis, a problem of that scale, even if change shouldn't be something that is prescribed, you need more tugs and urges for people to actually do something, you know? And just because we don't have that time that is left, and imagine if everyone is comfortable having like 5 cars, you know, eating meat every day and having leftover that they throw away all the time. If there isn't more nudging, there isn't more awareness, there isn't more, like, I guess maybe some pushing here and there, that sort of lifestyle, it's going to disproportionately affect the people who have nothing to eat, who have their environments robbed away from them because of natural disasters, because of climate change. And I'm increasingly realizing also the higher your level of comfort, the more you don't see the suffering elsewhere and the damage that's being done. And then I think part of that change process is also bridging that difference, right? Like, how do you get people in these different situations to have conversations with each other? How do you share those stories? And then, because eventually you cannot change someone, right? But you can inspire that. But then we need to expand the models and the ways. I don't like the word model, so let's just put away that that word. The ways in which we expand the storytelling or the outreach methods, or the points, the emotional touch points in which we can communicate with someone else on a deeper level, what ways he or she can contribute, or, you know, how urgent or important it is to actually act on something, how that would affect the ecosystem, and to build that love for the environment, the ecosystem, that is beyond just the cell. So I think it almost requires that level of generosity, right? Where you're not just looking at your selfish needs or desires, but also your family, your friends, your people who are in your society or people who are in the world, or, you know, the animals, the ocean. And and that I don't think there is one prescribed way of doing that, but There are a lot of things that conversations can do, intentional conversations that isn't just the sort of normal predominant narratives that are, you know, pushed out by people with economic interests. You know, there are all of these other conversations that's more heartfelt that needs to be out there in society. And very sadly, we don't have enough, I guess, sort of funding for that, enough spaces for that. And because the change needs to be controlled and measured by funders.
I'd like to, I'd like to reflect that back to you, and again reflect back to your podcast series, because I really do recommend that more people come to it. There's so much in it. And that is the whole issue of climate change. So I kind of throw the challenge in, who's dictating change? But when you do come to climate crisis, there's this added element of time and crisis. And there is a wonderful podcast, and again, I'm struggling to remember, but you will recall that there was a wonderful moment in it when the gentleman you were interviewing, just after you were talking about how you feel about the urgency of climate crisis, that he just stopped and just sort of held you in a bit of love and just said, I just want to stop right here and acknowledge that, you know, the strength of your feeling about that. And I was so moved by that. I thought that was such a wonderful moment in the podcast, and it was a really, really good one as well. So I really recommend it. Can you recall that and so, tell people what it was?
That was actually a recent one. So episode 24, yeah. Making Your Life as an Artist with Andrew Simonet. That podcast episode was actually the first time I spoke to him in person. I came across his book, Making Your Life as an Artist, by a friend of mine, Josien, who recommended me to read that, because I was really struggling coming back to Singapore after, you know, 6 years and completely different reality. And after I read that, there was so much in there that resonates with what I'm thinking, my life, and I would really recommend every artist out there to read it. It's just so invigorating to read something like that, that someone who actually understands that process. And then when we started talking, I mean, you can hear from the podcast that it was just really genuine. It quickly reached that space of authenticity really quickly. And I think also us having that generation, I wouldn't really say gap, but I guess that difference in our age, seeing from a different perspective. And that moment that you mentioned was also quite emotional for me, because I've been talking to a lot of people in the corporate business space about the climate and about what I'm trying to do. Like, people don't understand or don't really listen, or don't see it as an important enough issue, or that, oh, you know, your generation will feel it, but, you know, my generation probably not. And then it's just like that sense of frustration that was accumulated, and feeling like I'm not being heard, and that people are not feeling that urgency as much as I do, because it directly impacts me. And the sort of gravity of it and severity of it, not wanting to pass it on to future generations, and not having that met, when these are also people who have the power or ability to make a difference. I think him honoring that and giving me that space to acknowledge those feelings, it was quite an emotional moment for me.
And please excuse me, they've got somebody just trimming their hedge in the background, but I'll keep my talking limited. So I think I've thrown a sort of almost a provocation out there about who dictates change. But in doing that, I just wanted to honour that moment in your podcast series, and also in recognition that, you know, I too represent that generation gap. And I want to stop and honour the generations that come after me, and the reality that they're living with. So when I say who dictates the change, I don't want to do that in lack of awareness that there's a sense of urgency about that particular issue. So I don't know what the answer to that is. I think it lies somewhere in amongst that. I'm not going to pretend that I know what it is. I'd like to draw the conversation, though, back to funding and who pays for the change, who dictates the change because they've got the purse strings, and ask you what you feel that you've learned from all of the examples that have stepped outside of that, have stepped outside of the going for grant funding, stepped outside of, and I'm thinking particularly of Spiral. And again, I'll invite you to say which one that was.
Yep. So Inspiral was one of the earlier episodes called Horizontal Organization, and Inspiral episode 7. So I think, well, in a way, Inspiral is brilliant, and the ways that they managed to make it work was also because they leverage on tech expertise, which I feel I'm finding it quite difficult in spaces where it's not, you know, of its nature profit making. So like community spaces, for example, or sort of spaces in a social work where you largely rely on government funding or other sorts of funding to maintain. Actually something that I'm trying to do through Uninstalled and Savvy is also to get to that point of financial independence and sustainability. But then, so this is a recent article that I wrote about also, about how a passion economy will save us. And when we look at the sort of larger systems change, right, fundamentally it comes from personal transformation. What is going to drive that personal transformation? It's going to come from purpose. It's going to come from passion. It's going to come from what we care. And if materials-based consumption is not going to serve us anymore, why are we not looking at, you know, a passion economy in which we support each other in the passion that we are chasing or pursuing, or, you know, the dreams that we are realizing? I mean, it might sound very idealistic, but when we look at it, if my passion is about connecting people, holding spaces for conversations, and allowing people to achieve their purpose and their passion, and sort of guiding in that process of collective sense making, then if I offer these workshops, if people paid for these workshops, which, you know, these workshops are actually out there, I've designed them to try and shift myself to that sense of that level of financial independence. If people start to adopt these workshops, then I can fund the work that I'm doing with Onions Talk, with INSEP, and then that is going to save me the time that I'm gonna have to doing all these networking with funders and trying to get funding and trying to write for proposals and applications, which, you know, like maybe 9 out of 10 times you're not gonna get it through anyway, because you have other NGOs and organizations with years of track record or like larger scale to be able to support that sort of proposal writing. And if we could change that, then we are going to still be able to have an economy that will have jobs, but then we are not going to have that sort of environmental destruction and exploitation. But then this requires a cultural shift that requires us to rethink value. And the ways that we think value right now, and the ways that the advertisement industry is propagating, is that, you know, buy this product, buy that product, and then that product is going to fund this social media through ads to be able to provide it for free so that you can connect with one another for free and know what each other are doing. So then you have this entire system and economy that is very much also rooted in this advertisement agency selling us things that we don't actually need and trying to tell us that we need this thing. When we look at systems change and what we need for our environment to not be destroyed, right? At some point, everyone has to give up a little bit of comfort. We have to sacrifice something, right? And that sacrifice of material consumption, but if you still have spending power, why not just support something that would develop, you know, that would help support you in that inner work or in that journey of personal transformation, or in people sharing their art, sharing their music, or sharing what they really love to do with you, or, you know, sharing, supporting people on their organic farming journey, or their gardening endeavors. And all of these things, it could be lessons or workshops or, you know, community events. If we develop a culture in which we start to pay for these sort of services instead of treating them as something that is free or that, you know, it's too expensive, I don't want to pay for it, then we are going to support so many more livelihoods that are more intentional, that is purpose driven. And then we can slowly start to shift away from, you know, the old ways of doing things in which we have to produce all of these consumer goods that, when you track it back down to where it's coming from in terms of natural resources, it's going to destroy the environment somehow in some way or another. So then looking at the passion economy and looking at rethinking, redefining what value is and shifting the ways that we consume, I think is going to hold a key to the ways that we can change things while also allowing people to have that livelihood and income to keep the economy going.
Yeah, yes, and the passion, and the passion economy. I don't think I've heard it described as that, but I'm liking it and I'm hearing it in the way that you speak too. So I'm probably aware that I should be sort of trying to draw us to a conclusion. What's changed for you? I've got two more questions. What's changed for you in the course of these conversations? That's my first, and then I've got a little surprise for the last one.
What's changed for me? I think I myself have changed. I think before this journey, I saw, because I was mostly only within my own space and field, right? In a social sector, in the art space. So then, you know, money is always a scarcity for us. And I've for the longest time been sort of looking at that and seeing the world this way. And then when I came back and realized that, so there is money. It's just that it's not going to where the impact work is being done. It's not where people actually really need it to survive. And then, you know, really challenging these perspectives, these limiting beliefs towards a mindset of abundance, like really took a lot of work. But then getting to that and also challenging my like stereotypes and prejudice. So I intentionally enrolled myself on a business course because I wanted to understand what that world is thinking about. And I went in with a lot of, you know, stereotypes and prejudice and pretty negative ones because, you know, that's sort of what I have teased out and learned over the years. And then I made an effort to really try and be open. And I asked a lot of questions. I asked a lot of questions to that space. And I really tried and listened to people's stories. And I actually did listen. And I just had so many conversations. And then I realized that, you know, everyone wants to believe that there are good people doing good stuff, but sometimes their decisions and actions, they don't connect it with the sort of destruction that would entail. And it's from a place of not knowing or not, or ignoring or complying or compromising because they value, you know, being able to bring the bread home or being able to support their family or being able to provide a certain level of comfort, which it's not bad. You know, essentially it's coming from a place of love. And I cannot say that, you know, I am doing better stuff in the world than them honestly, you know, doing the work that they don't like to do, but to be able to provide for their family and to be able to meet that basic needs. Because, you know, I might be doing this work that maybe hopefully benefits a larger sort of society or environment, but I might not be able to provide for my family in the ways that they can, you know? So then it becomes also a thing of priority. So I think in terms of like change, being able to really process all of that and seeing things from different angles and perspectives also helped me to change the ways that I see and the ways that I work. So now I'm really working on how is, as much as I don't like the business space and world, how to bridge that language with people who are looking at profits and, you know, even that sort of CSR conversation and debate, but like how do I enter that space and be able to carve something financially sustainable out for myself while still balancing that act between being grounded and not being swept along and away by that sort of very dominant, you know, mindset philosophy of profit maximization, but still being able to hold my ground and be able to have income streams for the work that I do. So then it's a lot of mindset shift that, you know, there is the money out there, to operate from a thinking a mindset of abundance rather than that, you know, there is only this limit of funding and it requires a lot of work and you probably won't be able to get it. So I think shifting that and just being open to different things and trying to see the world and be, I guess, in a way, more agile in a sense to understand a space and figure out ways in which you can not really fit in, but find pockets in which you can exist without being too influenced or to not compromise what you do. I think, so this book that I recently read was, it mentioned this thing about the difficult thing to do is how do you not compromise your values while being in a marketplace? And I think that's so true. So then that's kind of like my journey and my fight right now, trying to strike that balance.
Wonderful. So yes, I mean, that just reflects how deep and long and continuing this reflective journey is for you. And I, again, you know, in awe of that curiosity and open heart, and please don't burn out. please take some love and support from me and from others who are just really admiring the journey so that you can continue it, because it is amazing to see. I'm just going to take you up because you have a question that you ask at the end of each of your podcasts. So I'm going to ask you to ask it of yourself, but also I'd like to ask, would you change or adapt that question from what you've learned, or perhaps if you wouldn't mind telling us what that question is, and reflect on the question and then maybe give us your answer, just to finish us off.
Yeah, so the question I ask is, what is one thing that someone can do to create change in this world? Actually, I crafted that question because I think a lot of these sort of conversations, it's very easy to sort of get yourself lost in it because there's so much and it's heavy and it's big and sometimes you just don't know what you can take away from it. So it was really intended to be, you know, put very simply, what is something that someone can take away from the conversation and from each person's learning? I think for me, what is reflective of, I guess, my 20s, which, you know, I'm still in my mid-20s, which I would like to say is, don't lose that fire. Yeah, one thing that you can do to create change in this world is to not lose that fire, because when you have that fire and it's burning and you have purpose, you're driven, and your teenage idealism or whatever you stand for and don't stand for, the ethics that you have, the justice that you have, all of these things are the things that will change the world and make it a better place. And that is why we need young people, because you don't stand for the crap that is out there that you don't stand for. And I've seen so many people in their 20s lose that along the way. And I don't think that serves us. What I'm trying to do through the podcast and through INSEP is also, hopefully when I get to a point where, you know, I'm financially sustainable and independent, I really want to support young people with resources so that they can keep that fire and make that fire into something that is bigger by supporting them with resources that can help them create sustainable businesses or enterprises or whatever model it is that can allow them to continue working on the things that they care about, that they love. Because I think passion inspires, and when we operate from that place of love in our work, which is, you know, going to be so much of our lives, then the world will be a much more beautiful and loving place.
And do you know that I'm listening through your podcast, quite a few people at the end brought love into that final question. So it was really great to hear you do the same. So yes, please accept some love for what you're doing here.
Thank you.
I think you're amazing. And yes, passion is what I'm taking away. The passion economy, what a great idea. And your passion in particular. Please keep it burning. Ask for the help that you need, because you know, there are people there who want to help you. And thank you. Thank you so much for doing the podcast series, which I highly recommend. Please, people do come on and find it. Do you want to tell us where they can find it, Pia?
It is on iTunes, it is on Spotify, it's on most of these podcast apps that you have. If it's not on there, let me know. I will just, you know, submit it in. It's called Onions Talk, onions that you peel, like that vegetable, and then, you know, peel the layers, and then let's talk about something that really matters. So Onions Talk. We're also on Facebook, if you check it out. And we also have website, which is linked to my personal website and also INSEP's website. So check out the links in description, or you can also find us on Instagram, which is the Instagram for INSEP, which is at Socially Engaged Practices, or my Instagram, which is at FEEYEH_NEO. Fienyo. Yep. Thank you for your time, Joel. Hello, Onions Talk listeners. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andre for the music. Catch you next episode.